Always Hole into Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Jazzat Maja, Chris Fuchs, Thomas Navin, Joe Mikindo, Steve Rogers, Cavante Chillis, John Curcio, Atif Sheik, Molly Ficarella, Trayvon Brady, Mike Franz, John Lloyd, Justin Maitner, Nick Ryan Magdoza, Becca Zeifel, Eddie Bissell, Cameron Minard, Dylan D'Antonio, Tom Gerke, T. Hamill, Nicholas Casso, Jared Gibbs, Erica Flynn, Braden Arnold, Mariana Sachi, Alana Gibbs, Darren Kirsch, Catherine, Rachel Miller, Casey Cochran, and Kathleen Holland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.
I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hole in Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined by Miss Lauren Wynn. What's up, Lauren?
Hiya. I'm happy to be back. Thank you for having me like a couple times this season.
That's right. She's also become my Crisis on Infinite Earths buddy over in our Crisis specials. So Lauren and I have been doing a lot of talk and a lot of podcasting together the last few weeks.
Yeah, if you guys are tired of me yet, let me know, I guess. I don't know. Don't let Zach know, let me know.
Now, Lauren, you are a big Lois Lane fan.
I am.
And looking at episodes to cover together in season 5, you know, I've like Exposed. That's a pretty big Lois Lane episode, I'd say, wouldn't you?
For sure, because usually if the thumbnail on Krypton's site was a photo of Lois Lane, pretty solidly a Lois Lane episode. And I remember, you remember like the Krypton site, they almost look like trading cards, the episode images for like reviews and everything. I remember the Lois Lane one pretty well. Oh, yes. Is that the companion book?
Yes, I'm holding up Smallville, the official companion, season 5, available wherever books are sold. Written by Craig Byrne, webmaster of Krypton site. And I believe this was the image.
Yep.
This is the famous Lois Lane at the strip club image. She's the one who was exposed in this episode. Or was it Senator Jennings? So many layers to the titles of Smallville episodes. But, you know, I don't think anyone said exposed in this episode. I had an ear out for it, Lauren, but I didn't hear anyone say that. So,
you know what? I don't think they did either. Huh.
It would be such an easy thing to say. Like, I know in other episodes they've said that. Like when Pete finds out Clark's secret in Duplicity, he's like, the real Clark Kent exposed. And
right.
I remember that. Because it was in the trailer for the episode they showed on the WB. Such a trailer line, right? But anyway, this is also the big Dukes of Hazzard reunion episode.
Yeah.
I have a cultural memory of Dukes of Hazzard. Like, I know it exists, right? But I've never watched it. And it's like a part of American culture, right? So do you have any point of reference for Dukes of Hazzard, Lauren?
It's so weird because visually, when does that take place? It was made in like the 80s, wasn't it?
Late 70s, early 80s, something like that, right?
The thing is, it was definitely filmed like 10 or 15 years after the time it takes place, because they look extremely like 70s, I think. But I think it was filmed in like the 80s or the 90s. So, and that's just not possible because John Schneider's not that old. Like, it's... I remember being very confused when this episode came out, and I was like, wait, just how old is he? When was the show on? And it was like there was some misleading in there, because they...
Well, I know that John Schneider lied about his age to get the part, because I think he was like...
Really?
He was like 16, maybe, and he said he was 18 or something like that. So he was younger than he should have been. It really shows, because Tom Wopat, right, his co-star in The Dukes of Hazzard, looks way older than John Schneider. You know, so.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. That's why he's so pretty on The Dukes of Hazzard. I didn't know he was 16. Okay.
Totally.
There we go.
To people who are... See, what is the crossover of Dukes of Hazzard fans and Smallville fans? I get it. It's like, oh, I loved John Schneider back on Dukes of Hazzard. I'm going to watch this new show. He's on Smallville. Like, I just don't see that audience sticking with Smallville just because John Schneider is a supporting cast member on it. Do you?
I think it's in like a, oh, to use something that you say, a low-hanging fruit. Because the only thing I can think of that's remotely like this is the guys from Prison Break being on Legends of Tomorrow.
Very good, yeah.
And it's like, you have one, it's like, why not get the other? And it just becomes a thing and you embrace it. And, you know, if you are a fan of it, if you, like, if you don't do it necessarily for those fans, but if that fan is there, it's really cool.
Well, and then also, I remember Spin City, I believe, when Michael J. Fox was on. They had Christopher Lloyd came on. Like, oh, remember, they were on Back to the Future together, that kind of thing. So it is a thing to do in TV shows to kind of reunite these kind of characters. But I just think about, like, the people who were watching Dukes of Hazzard back in the day and the people watching Smallville. I feel like that Venn diagram is a very small sliver in the center.
Well, maybe because, you know, Dukes of Hazzard is definitely like a piece of Americana, and very early Smallville was a family show. And season five is when it, like, the hard exit of a family show started, like, probably mid season three. And then, like, really happened season four. But maybe if there are some families who still gathered around the hearth to watch it every week, maybe there was, like, a dad who watched Dukes of Hazzard who would watch it with their kids, who would watch Smallville with their kids and get a kick out of it. It's a very obscure demographic.
and speaking of John Schneider being just, like, a staple of American television, in Smallville, The Official Companion, Season 5, available wherever books are sold. Michael Rosenbaum had this to say just about John Schneider being a star of Dukes of Hazzard. He said, quote, "That was surreal. It was like, okay, I've watched him in the 80s when I was growing up, and now I'm in his garage about to get in the General Lee. It was historic." You know, because, I mean, to them, it'd be like, oh, man, those Duke boys are at it again, right? So, and they had references, like they played the theme song, "Just a Good Old Boy" by Waylon Jennings and Nicodemus in season one. And the way Jonathan would always, like, you know, stop the truck, like this sliding stop. And John Schneider himself was a very proficient stunt driver based off his time on Dukes of Hazzard. So he was able to do a lot of the stunts, like driving the truck all crazy and stuff. And it's a very signature John Schneider, Dukes of Hazzard kind of way. He, like pulls up sideways and stops the brakes and opens the door and gets out of a car. He learned that from Dukes of Hazzard. So that's his claim to fame, if you will. So, and then they thought, oh, this would be a cool way to bring in the other Dukes of Hazzard, Tom Wolfe. That's something they had wanted to do for a long time.
Well, yeah, I'm surprised it took five seasons.
They were looking for, you know, the right story, I guess, right?
Okay. That's cool. I never knew about that. I won't say it's rare for me to learn Smallville facts, but that's something that I just had no idea about, the whole contextualization of, like, these Jonathan Kent-isms and where they came from. Very cool.
And this is, you know, it's kind of a adult episode because of Jonathan and Senator Jennings. And it's also an adult episode in another usage of the term, because we spend a lot of our time in a strip club here, don't we?
This episode is so wild. Do you have a counter for Lois wearing costumes at this point?
You know, I don't. Should I start that?
I really think you should, because that's one of my favorite Lois Lane isms. Like, it started
with
Terry.
Has she worn a costume yet, Lauren, in the show? Let's think about this. I'm just thinking through season four. I don't think she has. I mean, when she was possessed by a witch, that was different. And she was pretty much herself the rest of season four. So I don't remember her going undercover or...
She sneaks into Luther Corp a couple times. One time she's a janitor. I know
janitor.
That's later on.
Yeah, her and Jimmy.
But I think she sneaks into Luther Corp with another disguise earlier on as Sadie Blodgett. And I feel like it's an earlier one. That, or you know what? It's probably that they use, like, a very early promo picture of her. That's what I'm thinking of.
Maybe
okay, so this might be the first one then.
All right, so we're going to institute that. Lois... costumes. Is there a funnier, like, a pun or a name, you know, like Amazing Technicolor Kryptonite? I like that, but when I can't think of anything else, I'm like, oh, Lana Kills. So it's like, we'll think about it, but if nothing else, we are going to start. That's a great idea, because she dresses up as a bunny, she dresses up as a stormtrooper, Wonder Woman. Like, it does become a tradition.
She has, like, an oops I did again sort of outfit in season six.
I believe at some point, don't we look in her closet and she has all these costumes?
Yes!
Okay.
I love it.
I don't know what episode that is, but yeah, props to the prop people for that. But anyway, lots of big stuff here going on, so let's get into it. Exposed.
Senator, campaign headquarters said I could find you here.
What can I do for you?
A young woman was killed in the warehouse district last night, hit and run. We went through her apartment and we found this. I don't have enough evidence to bring you in for questioning, but I would certainly appreciate an explanation.
So would I. I'd never seen her before.
Well, that must have been tricky while she was cuddled up on your lap. With all due respect, Senator, pictures don't lie.
Hang on just a minute. This day and age, they most certainly do. This picture's a fake.
Doesn't matter. The minute it hits the press, the damage is done. This could ruin me.
So it looks like the mudslinging's already started.
Dad, do you really think Lex would go this far?
Come on, Clark. You know Lex Luthor better than anybody. He's not going to enter a race unless he's sure he's going to win it.
Exposed is the sixth episode of Smallville's fifth season. It aired on November 3rd, 2005. It was written by Brian Peterson and Kelly Saunders and directed by Jeno Swark.
Those are very important names. Such important names in Smallville and Superman.
Go on to become executive producers on the show. And Jeno Swark, who's directed several episodes of Smallville, of course famous for directing Supergirl the movie from 1984.
Yes! Oh my gosh. What a special episode.
Also Jaws 2. and also Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour. So,
oh,
lots of connections there for our friend Jeno Swark. He goes on to direct many episodes of Smallville as well as many episodes of Heroes. So, got to get my obligatory Heroes reference in there for the podcast. So, there you go.
There we go.
So, the episode starts out as Chloe had just gotten her job at the Daily Planet in the last episode, Thirst, and she's working the midnight hotline, and she gets a call about obituaries. But unfortunately, the Daily Planet doesn't run pet obituaries, and I find that shameful.
I'm kind of surprised that line exists in Smallville. It seems like such a... Do you watch the Good Place? I feel like they're constantly making jokes about people and like humanity and just like the level of weird and ridiculous people can get. It's kind of weird to have a joke like that in Smallville, like 2005.
It's like, are you guys making some kind of commentary on something? Or like, it's a random... You're right. It's totally random out of nowhere. I guess it's just to show how... "Quote unquote,
how grueling that
ridiculous.
Work is." Yeah,
yeah, it's like, oh yeah, no, ma'am, you want to call somebody else? Da 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 da.
Right.
So Chloe's working in the bullpen there, and Lois is back there playing PS2, having a good old time, huh?
Yeah, it was such a weird voiceover where it just goes, "Die!" I'm like, I can't imagine the instructions for, like, the script for Erica Drotz is like, and now you come in, you just start saying, "Die, die," or whatever.
What's my motivation, Jeno? But it's established that it's 1 a.m. and Lois is hanging out with Chloe, and she's going to move into the apartment at the Talon because Lana is now Chloe's roommate. And now that magical apartment at the Talon, which every female character on the show lives at some point, it's now Lois's turn to live there. Yeah, except Tess Mercer, fair enough. Martha and Jonathan were talking about moving in there when they're going to lose the farm at the end of season 2 and beginning of season 3. So I count that as well. And Martha works there, all right? So I'm just saying, the Talon is like the lightning rod location for all female main cast members of the show. So, it is interesting because I'm like, and the show even addresses this. It's like, Lois just moved back in with the Kents like 2 episodes ago. And now she's moving out. It's like, all right, whatever. Moving is expensive. I hate moving. Moving is expensive and tedious. So if you're going to stay with the Kents for free.
That's why you get your cousin to help you with it.
That's why Lois is really here. She's like, well... Because Chloe's like, why are you really here? She's like, well, I wanted to make sure you could help me move. And Chloe's like, we're family. Of course I'll help you. Tell me what time to be there. So, you know, the sisters in arms, Chloe and Lois, right?
Yeah. It's funny going back into these early seasons and seeing them together. I always forget the reason why Erica Drotz was basically blonde when she first appeared is because she was supposed to look related to Chloe, but also like be the antithesis of Lana visually. And it's funny when you see them doing like these sort of sisterly cousin things, and you see that resemblance there, even though they just slowly get away from it each season with no context whatsoever.
Her hair just gets darker and darker and darker as the seasons progress, for sure. So we get another phone call, and it's someone who's like in a lot of trouble. She's like, oh, I can't let him get me. I need you to come find me. And this woman gives Chloe an address, so her and Lois drive out there. And of course, it's right next to that bridge we always see in Smallville. But apparently it's in Metropolis now, so.
Is this the earliest appearance of that bridge?
No, we have seen this bridge. The most iconic time we've seen the bridge, in my opinion, is season 4, when Alicia brings Chloe there and Clark catches the car. So that, to me, that's the most iconic use of that location in Smallville.
Is that the same bridge that Oliver almost gets hit by, like, a car or something around there? And then it's also the one that Clark flies, or he runs away and the Legion, like, intercepts
yes.
him? Is that the
that's
same
the
bridge?
Line. Why aren't you flying, bro?
Oh, my God.
That's the bridge. If there is a bridge in Smallville and or the Arrowverse, it's this bridge. There must
that's
be one
crazy.
Bridge in Vancouver, right? But yes, it's the same bridge. Also, the same phone booth prop they've been using since season 3 and will continue to use through season 10. I mean, give them credit. They're making their money's worth out of a phone booth prop. But so I thought it was weird. Like Chloe, is she not supposed to be working like the 24/7 hotline that she just drives out to meet up with this girl?
Well, she admits that she had to take her lead when she got it. Side note about that bridge, I never noticed that. And I didn't start noticing that bridge until like later on in Smallville, like probably season 7 or season 8. And I'm
you,
ashamed.
You don't, no, it's just the overuse of it later when you rewatch, you're like, oh, it's that damn bridge again. Because like,
right.
they spread
and they have
it out
like a
pretty
rooftop
well.
Too.
Yeah, no, they spread it out pretty well in the first half of the show. But when it's in like in every other episode in the last couple seasons, you're like, oh, it's that bridge again. So they find this woman. She's from the phone. He's like, oh, hey, help. What a... And so Chloe and Lois are going up to her, and then she gets hit by a car. Hit and run. Car drives off. So she's dead.
That, the way she was hit, like, she's, like, still intact after that car just completely mows her over.
Didn't you see? She has a little trickle of blood in her mouth, Lauren. That means she's dead.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it was a very clean, very sanitary hit and run. So
very shockingly, yeah, yeah. Because she should not have a shape after that.
Yes, yes, yes. And then we get our opening credits, and we're back. And Jonathan and Clark are working on the farm, having some father-son short time. and like any good parent, when you go to help them, they're like, so how long do I have you for? Like, and Clark's like, well, Lana's out of town for the weekend. It's like, okay, well, I guess Kristen Kirk will not appear in this episode. I believe this is the first episode of the entire show that Kristen Kirk is not in.
Ah.
I'm sure someone out there will correct me if I'm wrong. Chloe's busy, and Lois will, I'd do anything to get rid of her, because they're going to get married one day, so it's funny. They don't like each other, so they're just... Do you get tired of that trope? Because that I get tired of that on this show for several seasons.
I know you do, and I think it's so funny, because like you love the show, but sometimes when you talk about it, it's like a total hate watch. Like,
So wait, all that aside, so they're doing these chores, and this Dodge Charger comes up. It's roaring down the Kent farm, and Clark starts to get worried. He's like, oh, Dad? And John's like, oh, it's okay, son. And then they do that Dukes of Hazzard sideways park, and who pops out? But Tom Wopat. One of those Duke boys is back to meet up with his boy John Schneider, like we've been talking about. And it's Senator Jennings, Uncle Jack, as Clark calls him.
We've never heard of before.
Yeah. Oh, it's Uncle Jack. Oh, we all know Uncle Jack. You know, we've talked about him for 4.5 years now on this show. No, we haven't.
And he's Clark's hero.
Clark's hero. Clark, what? Come on. But to the show's credit, and I noticed this a lot in season 5, they plant little things in episodes previously and after episodes, like kind of to make some like, connective tissue. Like in Thirst, when Chloe's at the Daily Planet, and editor Pauline Kahn, played by the late, great Carrie Fisher, is like, do you have that story about Senator Jennings? Because they knew in the next episode, Senator Jennings is going to show up. So I really appreciate that.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, were you paying attention? Because it pays off. So anyway, watching it back now, you really do appreciate these things. It's stuff that just goes over your head when you're watching it the first time, obviously, because you don't know to look out for it. But good on them for setting this character up, because the rest of the show certainly didn't. Because to your point, we've never heard of this guy before. He's apparently Jonathan's best friend and Clark's hero.
Also, it's funny because they talk about, because he's supposed to be this huge presence in Clark's life, yet later it cuts to them and they're joking, going over stories that realistically Clark's probably heard all of those, you know? So it's always an interesting obstacle to try to insert someone as if they've always been there, but then introduce new content as well.
Suspension of disbelief for these TV shows, but yeah, to our point, kind of a retcon when you never mentioned this guy before. So... He's in town because he needs to shore up support from the farmers community because Lex Luthor is running for Senate. Some people would say that's kind of random and out of nowhere, but I disagree. I think Lex Luthor, as established from the very first season of this show, right? He has political aspirations. He wants to be president mm-hmm. one day, right? And where do you start? You start small. You start a local senator, right? So I like how the show's like, okay, let's get into that. Let's start the seeds of that eventual, because in Smallville continuity, it's set in stone. Lex Luthor will become the president. So I like how they get that started now.
Good groundwork.
So then we have Chloe and Lois back on the Daily Planet talking to Maggie Sawyer.
Okay.
Talking about continuity, people.
Yes, and I don't even know when I understood who Maggie Sawyer was, but it was several years after I saw this episode.
Yeah, so she is an important character in from the Superman mythology. I think most people probably know her most from Superman the Animated Series. She was a recurring character there. And of course, she became
Doesn't she look like Agnes Dean in Superman the Animated Series? She has like short blonde hair.
Yes, it's very, very true, very true. And she goes on to play a prominent role in Supergirl. The season two of Supergirl, because she's the love interest of Alex Danvers for most of that season. So, but right here, she is a recurring character on Smallville, and she appears in season two, season three, season five, and she has one more appearance in season seven. So I appreciate the continuity. This actress is Jill Teague
is
her name.
Hold on. Wait, you said she was in season two, season three, season... We've seen her already?
So, yes. She's in season... She's in season two. She's in Insurgents.
Okay.
Season three, she's in Exile. She's in season five, this episode Exposed, obviously. And then she's in season seven in Descent, which is the episode where, of course, spoilers, Lex kills Lionel. And she's kind of on that investigation.
Okay, this is wild because, I don't know about you, did you ever just like Google opening credits for Smallville shows that did not exist back in the day? Like that was my thing to do on YouTube when I was in high school. I would just like... endlessly Google like Smallville season whatever credits. Like if it was Smallville season six, I would do Smallville season seven credits just to like, you know, try to like I was hungry for new content. And people would always like pitch Metropolis shows,
and they
always
Perry
use...
White and Maggie Sawyer, right?
They didn't always do Perry White, but definitely Maggie Sawyer, and they always use clips from this episode. I don't think I knew that she was in other episodes. And I always thought it was random because to me, I thought she had one appearance. I was like, oh, they really, really went hard on that.
Who's this one-off cop? Like, get over it, people, right? But anyway.
Oh, God. It's embarrassing. Like, my first watch of Smallville, like, which I've said that season four and season five, like, I'm really strong with, like, the first couple seasons and the last couple seasons. It gets really muddy in the middle.
Point B, when Maggie Sawyer's here, they're talking, Maggie Sawyer does not give fill in the blank about this murder. Like, she cares. And she's like, she's telling Lois and Chloe, like, look, it's the big city. Bad things happen all the time, right? I mean, we'll look into it, but what are you going to do? Because Lois kind of calls her out, like, you're not even going to investigate this, are you? Blah, blah, blah. Because she's like, you didn't get a name or a partial plate or blah, blah, blah. Good job being an investigative reporter. So she's it's like, damn.
Woof. But, you know, Chloe needed to hear that. We'll follow up on that later. She does get a plate later.
She does get a plate. That's right. It's like brilliant writing of Smallville. Planting the seeds here. Chekhov's license plate in the story here. So we cut back to the Kent farm, and Uncle Jack and Clark and Jonathan are talking about stories. Basically, I assume just recounting the plot of a Dukes of Hazzard episode, right?
Yeah.
Then Maggie Sawyer shows up. Even though she was kind of being a hard ass with Lois and Chloe, she did take it seriously. She is investigating this death. They searched the dead woman's apartment, whose name is Melissa. I believe it's in my notes here somewhere. We'll get to it. Let me just turn the pages here. And yes, Melissa. There you go. Why did I doubt myself? I shouldn't have. So her name is Melissa. Maggie Sawyer went through her place, finds this photo, and it's of Uncle Jack and Melissa in a gentleman's club in a booth. And she's like, all right, look, Senator, this woman is dead. We found this picture. What can you tell us about it? He's like, well, what can you tell me about it? I've never seen that woman before, right? That's deniability, right? That's what he's doing.
And then Jonathan Kent's like, it's photoshopped, basically.
But I love when she says, she's like, well, pictures don't lie. And Jonathan's like, well, this day and age, it certainly does.
Is, I didn't know what he meant when he said that. I was like, what do you mean the photo's not real? Like, I don't know. It just seemed like such a weird thing to say. He didn't say like, oh, the photo is doctored. He said, doesn't he say this photo isn't real? I was like, so, what do you mean it's not real? It is right there.
It says witchcraft, I say. Jonathan, of course, immediately thinks Lex is behind it. And he's like, Clark, you know Lex better than anyone. You know, he'd do anything to win a race. I'm like, the inconsistent nature of Jonathan and Lex is kind of frustrating on the show because they do a lot of great stuff with their dynamic, right? And there's a lot of episodes where like they like, Lex is part of the family and I respect you, Lex. And, you know, all I ask is that you consider me part of the family. All these sorts of things between them. So it's like three steps forward and it's like 10 steps back when they need it to be. like, well, I've never liked Lex. Ah. It's like whatever they're reading the season one Bible and not the season five Bible about what John thinks about Lex, I think, in some scenes. So we'll see about that. They're going to investigate that picture. But Clark, he goes straight to Lex. He's like, Lex, is it true? It's like just barging
I know.
In.
It's like a caricature of like how the entire show goes, basically, or like the first few seasons. It's like, how often does it happen? And okay, and because you have literally been rewatching the show for years now, is this an unusually bad incident of that, or am I just reacting like because I haven't seen it in a while? Because that just it was really hard for me to take that seriously. I was like, oh God, this was really not done well, and it happened all the time back then.
No, it's in retrospect, probably I should have made a counter for this, but just no, it's a common thing in the show.
You Clark really just, should have.
Clark just
but it seemed
in.
Like such a bad example of it.
Yeah, because it Lex. And I love it. Lex says here, he's like, well, Clark, considering you've been MIA for weeks, I thought a hello would be helpful, you know, because their friendship is on the rocks here. And this is, to be honest, this isn't a deal about this episode. Like, they're almost kind of too friendly here. Like, I liked what they were doing, like, through Mortal and Aqua. Last week in Thirst, they were kind of, like, you know, same deal. Like, they kind of took some steps back. Like, this could have been a scene in season three, right? Or even season four, where they're like, yeah, I found your secret room of me, but I forgive you and let's be friends. No, they have a lot of unresolved stuff going on here, and they just kind of ignore that just to get the plot going. And that's my opinion, right? Anyway. So Lex is shown this picture. He's like, I don't know what this is. You know, Clark basically accuses Lex of faking it. But Lex recognizes the booth of a gentleman's club in Metropolis. And it's
wild days in Metropolis.
Yes, that's right.
Club Zero, Club whatever this club is called.
Club, we'll call this Club One. So I don't know, they has a name, but I don't know what it is. But he's a member. Right? He pulls out a like a member's pass to this club, because Clark's like, well, I'm gonna get to the bottom
which
of this.
It's just conveniently on his desk right there too,
in an open briefcase. Like, just, you know, it's so good, because you know, Lex, you never know when he's gonna fancy going down to Club One down there. And because Clark's like, well, I'm gonna get to the bottom of this. Senator Jack's like my hero. I know this guy. This can't be right. And he's like, well, little Clark, look, if you insist on looking into this, here you go, just don't get in any trouble, you know. And he gives him the card, and of course that means Clark's gonna get into some trouble.
To be fair, I love those moments, even though the context was not right for it. I love when Lex does like those big brotherly things, like, oh, I'll buy you beer, just don't get too crazy, basically. You know, like, oh, I'll bring fireworks to your party in Smallville.
That was a great big brother moment right there. That's an ultimate Lex Luthor moment, for supplying fireworks for Clark's house party in Smallville. So then we go down there to, I'm going to keep calling it Club One because I forget the name of it. But Chloe and Lois go down there to investigate, you know, because remember, they're both Lois Lane at this point. And they go down there and they get turned away at the door. It's like, oh, our friends are already in there. Can we come in? And the guy's like, this is a private club. I'm sorry.
Also, does it make sense that, I don't know about you, you are a man. I am a woman. I don't go to strip clubs to have fun. Like, is that a thing that women that heterosexual women do?
It's the gentleman's club, so there's gonna be women, like, there. I don't know, right? It's an odd,
I know that some
cover.
Women do it for like bachelorette parties just because they want to go, like, have a good time or whatever that means.
Or whatever
that means, embracing the Bacchae before they get married. Yeah, such a weird premise. Like, oh, we want to get to the hottest club. It's like, this is a strip club, not like a club.
Yes, I think you guys misunderstand what we're all about here. So but they see the back door where all the talent is entering. So they go through there, they start looking around, and again, a little bit of continuity. Chloe mentions that all these outfits make her Halloween costume look tame in comparison, so good on your writers for that connective tissue there. And they keep mentioning Jimmy Choo shoes, because that's what the Melissa, the woman who was hit, was wearing. I used to photograph weddings, so that's mm-hmm. that's the only reason I know that that's like a big deal. You know, like, oh, I got Jimmy Choo's. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I'm not like Mr. Fashionista over here, so it's just funny that I'm like, oh, now I know. I'm like, oh, Jimmy Choo's, wow, yeah, that really was, those were some nice shoes. So so that's why they're looking, like, there's no way she could have afforded that on this kind of salary and all that kind of stuff. So they start sneaking around, and they go in like the office and going through the file cabinets and all that, but then they get, you know, found by the owners of the place. And Chloe just kind of offers up Lois, because the guy's like, oh, are you the new dancer? And Chloe's like, yeah, that's her. So, it's a funny moment there, I thought.
Would you have bought that if you were in that scenario where a girl's just like, oh, don't be shy. Tell him why you're here.
Yeah. Well, go ahead. Because take on one hand, off. It's like, so
on one hand, it's really obvious. On the other hand, it's like, well, why else would they be here?
Well, yeah. It's like, okay, you must. Why? Yeah, exactly. Like Occam's razor, right? They must be here for the job. So, and Chloe's there for moral support, I guess. And she just gets to hang out backstage, and as Lois gets dressed, and we'll get to what her outfit is in a minute here. Meanwhile, Lex goes to the Kints to see Jack, but Jonathan's there. And they have a lot of back and forth. And again, this is to my point about like, I never liked you, Lex. And blah, 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 blah. It's like, okay, guys, like,
it's really aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty strong for all they've been through together. But I like what Lex says. He's like, yeah, I can see how things might look a certain way from up there in your pulpit or whatever. So he kind of calls him out, which it's like, I like Jonathan being the moral center and whatnot, but I like it when people call him out for being a little too hard headed as well. So,
yeah.
And we have a Dukes of Hazzard reference because
Lex, that went over my head.
Yeah, Lex is like, want to ask your good old boy to explain this, and he like throws down some cell phone records because apparently, you know, Uncle Jack had been calling Melissa on a regular basis, and it's funny how like all the numbers are highlighted and stuff. Like, did Lex do this? Did his people do this? Highlight all these numbers? But he gives it to Jonathan, and he's like, what do you got to release this? He's like, I'm not, but I'm sure the press will, and he leaves. So is it Lex still playing, taking the high road? I guess here he wanted to give him a heads up.
I love when he does stuff like that, too.
And he stops doing that about halfway through the season. But up until, you know, he's still trying.
Literally halfway through the season, around Christmas this season.
There it is, Christmas Eve. He's still trying to, like, not be his dad at this point. We cut back to the Gentleman's Club, and Lois is getting ready. And it's like a big secret, right? Like, we don't see what Lois is dressing into. You're like, oh, what's it going to be? Of course, if you saw the trailer for this episode, you totally know what it was going to be, because, of course, they promote it in that way. But Chloe starts to, ask around, like, oh, hey, you know this girl? And they're like, they don't want to talk to her. They're shutting her down.
That one girl, like, heavily blows her off. Like, doesn't she say, I don't know how to tell you this. Don't talk to me.
Yeah.
It's like, dang.
Is that the Texan girl? Like the cowgirl or something. I think that's the one she chose to talk to, but it is amazing.
Yeah, like the first girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
But then we get our one hint of what Lois might be wearing, because Lois is like, what do you think? And Chloe looks up at her and says, well, God bless America. So
do you think that they did that? Cause I don't know, Superman, all American.
And her dad's a general. I mean, you know, she's an army brat. I mean, there's some connective tissue there, I guess. But it's like, what are they like? Here's a rack of clothes. Pick something. Or do they say, here's what you're going to wear? You don't know. But we have Clark at the club. And this is hilarious. This is why Tom Welling, I always say he excels at playing a villain. He also excels at comedy. He really does. Because he's like this awkward, like, like it's just so funny to see him try and fit into this environment, right?
Definitely. I have some notes about this scene. Well, actually, you go first, and I'll let you know, like, how this scene has, like, informed my life.
Well, so he goes in there, and the owner guy, he's like, oh, can I help you, sir? He's like, oh, yeah, I'm a first time here. Lex Luthor recommended me. He shows him Lex's pass. He's like, oh, great. Will Mr. Luthor be joining you tonight? He's like, no, I'm meeting Senator Jennings. Like, oh, okay, well, we'll bring you to the regular table. And you can tell Clark's like, oh, man, because he was hoping he would say that, and guy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. But he's like, oh, yeah, he comes here all the time. Let me take you to the table. And so it's a good, that's a good beat right there where Clark's like, oh, I guess he really does come here. And then, so hilarious. He sits down at this table, and this waitress comes up to him. He's like, hey, honey, how you doing? What can I get you? He's like, oh, the Coke. straight up on the rocks. Like, it's so funny. Like, I've used that line myself just to be amusing in places, but I thought it was a great moment.
It was so painfully awkward. It's a script thing, but it's also the way he said it.
It's a secondhand embarrassment you're getting for them, but you're supposed to feel
literally
awkward, so it's really effective.
And then we get to a pretty iconic Smallville moment.
Yes, an iconic Smallville moment. So did you? I didn't catch this. This is a note in the companion, actually, but Lois's stage name is Margot Neal.
Oh,
which is of course a reference to Margot Kidder and Noelle Neal. Two previous actresses who played Lois Lane. So I thought that was a nice little...
Did they say that in the episode?
I think, like, coming to the stage. I think it was one of those speakers in the background. But I did not hear that, but that's what the companion said. So Lois comes out there, and she is just fumbling around and
when she starts marching, that was also like I receded into my seat and basically covered my eyes with my hands and like looked through my fingers to watch it. It was so painful.
It really is secondhand embarrassment of the best kind. And then Clark realizes it's her. He's like, oh my God. You know, he's looking away. Yeah. And then, of course, what is the song but Don't Ya by the Pussycat Dolls?
I know.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like hot me? It's like me. Smallville, again, on point with the music choices, right?
Oh my gosh. You know, I didn't have a lot of notes for this episode. I think I wrote down like four things, and one of them was just in all caps, Pussycat Dolls!
At the height of their popularity. Like, this was a new song, I guess, back then, right? I mean, you still hear it today, but I think it was on the top 40
charts. It's pretty comical
charts.
Hearing it today.
Yes, it's a parody of itself by now.
Yeah. So the really crazy thing with this scene is, as a Smallville fan, it just goes and it bleeds into your life in a lot of weird ways. Like, especially if you're like, if you look to the characters to inform your life decisions or whatever, it's pretty well documented. I'm a giant Lois Lane fan. So at random points in my life, I found myself thinking, like, for no reason, just other than, I don't know, you think about it. I think about the, I don't know, cojones that Lois had that the fictional character had to be able to do this scene, to be able to like strip in front of people, no training whatsoever, literally wearing nothing. And I'm like, do I have that in me? Like, because I always ask myself, like, what would Lois Lane do? And this was kind of like a reversal of, would I be able to do what Lois Lane does? So just, I don't know, sometimes like when I think about the scene, that the question is right there. It's like, Lord, could you do that? Nope, definitely could not. And I respect Lois Lane more. Conversely, I'm always amazed that Clark, like he has a beautiful woman, like half naked woman, like on his lap, basically. And he's not looking anywhere near her. And he's like trying to look anywhere that's not her. And then that also informed me where it held men to this really impossible benchmark of, is that how a man would react in that situation? I don't think they would.
Well, see, they're playing up like, oh, Clark, like, they're like brother-sister, right? So, like, oh, it's my sister. Like, that's the kind of vibe they're going for it with. Like, oh, I can't, oh, it's Lois, you know, but it's like, come on, bro. Like, let's be real.
No, so if he was, like, an 11-year-old boy or, like, 12 years old, if it's a boy who still plays video games and has no interest in anyone sexually, that would make sense. Clark is like 18 years old here. It does not make sense that he isn't reacting in the slightest, no matter how much he doesn't like her.
Well, as we know, Clark only has eyes for Lana. So
I guess I love it.
I love what it's like something Pete said in like season two. Is it Red? Right, where Clark's like checking out the girl Jesse. He's like, aren't you like married to Lana in your imagination? So like, I really think like that is a factor here. I think, you know, he's trying to be like, I don't know. But yes, to your point, it's like he really is playing like Tom Hanks and Big or something. Like, oh, I don't know what to do with all this adult stuff going on.
Yeah, basically, that's nothing new. Clark Kent is so pure that he holds men to a standard that basically cannot be reached.
That's right. That's why we all want to be Clark, but we're all Lex. Let's just face it, everyone. So
we all want to be Clark, but we're all Pete.
Yeah. Yeah. Rather be DJ the decoy any day. So Lois marches her way off the stage, really throws herself into it, as you said, you know, so starts doing some twists and all that stuff. Apparently it's a gentleman's club, but not a strip club, because nobody gets naked. I don't know if that's just because it's TV, or at least Lois doesn't. I mean, some people do, I don't know. The point is, Lois marches off the stage over towards Clark because she recognizes him, he recognizes her. She starts like kind of like sitting on his lap, all this stuff. To your point, he's being all awkward about it. Just, what are you doing here? It actually is a really classic, you know, it is a classic Lois and Clark dynamic thing. I give it that. Like, that's something you totally see on Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, right? You would totally see this where, like, Clark's trying to do some investigating, go somewhere, and Lois is a performer, you know?
I love when they end up in the same spot, like, using completely different methods. Given Clark actually, he didn't use superpowers to get in this time. He didn't like break open a door or like, you know, listen to someone's conversation that he shouldn't have heard. He got there by his connections, but generally as like a Superman through line, I love when they're both pursuing leads and then they comically kind of show up at the same place.
Yes. So as much flack as I give their use of Lois here in the early seasons, I give him credit. This is great stuff. So then she's like, hey, come on, look at me. You're going to get me fired. Give me some money. So like, he pulls out this $20 bill and he's like, Where do I put it? And she just grabs the 20s, puts it in her bra, and she just looks so disgusted with him because he's being so silly. It's just a great moment between them, I think.
I live for every time she rolls her eyes at him in these early seasons.
Yeah, yes, totally. So this Russian guy kind of takes Lois away here. And then suddenly, there's a crackdown. Maggie Sawyer's here. Everybody's under arrest because they had a quote-unquote report of minors at the club. And they say this a few times in the episode. They're all 18. So does minors mean something else? Like, is they under 21? Is that the problem? Or, because minor means 18, I thought.
Maybe there are girls dancing that shouldn't be, like girls who are younger than 18.
Maybe so. I guess I was thinking like they were talking about Clark or Lois, you know, because Maggie Sawyer mentions later, well, your friend who is probably a minor too. I'm like, no, they're all like, Lois is like 20 or 22 or something like that. Lois is not a minor. Neither is Clark. Neither is Chloe. Neither is all these people. But so I'm not sure. Like, I was waiting for some reveal of like there was a tip or something like that. I don't know what happened here, but just bad, wrong place, wrong time, right, for Clark. And also, did you know what time this is all taking place, Lauren? You had to guess. What time do you think all this is going down?
I would imagine Chloe and Lois arrive between 10 and 12 at night.
Okay. And Lois goes on stage, I don't know, like at 1 or 2 or something maybe. So Maggie Sawyer says that it's 5 a.m. At the time when they're all like arrested and stuff. I'm like, okay, is this Metropolis? They party hard in Metropolis. No wonder this is the biggest nightclub because it's like,
well,
4
you know why? It's because it takes them 6 hours to drive there.
That's a very good point. So, they got him open 24 hours, you know, to accommodate all these people driving in. But when Clark's being arrested, Chloe and Clark pass each other. And like, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? Where's Lois? You know, and Clark uses his super hearing to hear, you know, one of the people that worked there saying that Jennings had nothing to do with the girl. He was drunk and that he took Jennings home or something. So Clark's like, oh, okay, good. He didn't kill that girl. So he's satisfied that he was right about that. They're walking around and Chloe keeps asking about Melissa, who's the dead girl. The people backstage, they finally start, you know, talking. They're like, all right, well, there's like this suave Euro looking guy and takes a girl a month and, you know, oh, he just goes off to live happily ever after. And this other chick's like, no, we don't know what happens to him. All we know is they disappear. So
I trust that girl. I'd be friends with that girl.
Because this ain't no fairy tale here, ladies.
You know? Right.
So fortunately, though, Lex Luthor scores some more points in the friendship chart for Clark and Chloe, because Maggie Sawyer says, all right, well, you guys should be really thankful for some phone calls by Lex Luthor, some very generous phone calls, because you're free. So get on, you guys. So I get, so, you know, Lex still trying to be Clark's friend here, I guess, getting him out of trouble.
Sometimes you really just understand completely why they're mortal enemies when you watch this show.
Yeah. It's like, how many times have I helped you? You know? Right. So then we have our big, our big Dukes of Hazzard scene between Uncle Jack and Jonathan.
This was a really indulgent scene.
Yeah, it would have been even more indulgent. But so, by the way, the beginning of the scene is Tom Wopat, Uncle Jack, on a cell phone. And the way that he's holding a cell phone makes me think Tom Wopat has never used a cell phone in his life. Because he's like, it's like a flip phone, but he's holding it like at an angle kind of away from his face. Like, I don't know. Like, just when you rewatch the episode,
I didn't see that.
I mean, he probably has never used a cell phone. I don't know, but it certainly didn't look like he had. But you're right. This is legitimately just an all-out, hey, guys, you remember the Dukes of Hazzard? Well, here it is again, because Jonathan's driving the Dodge Charger. Jack jumps in the car through the window. Jonathan does kind of double take. He's like, whoa, that door's been stuck since I got it, because that's how they used to get in the car back on the show, so very clever. And apparently there was supposed to be, you thought it was indulgent now, there was supposed to be a huge chase scene with the cops to be even more Dukes of Hazzard-esque. So Greg Beeman reveals in the companion, he said, quote, we wrote a big car chase and the money ran dry. The two guys were running, a cop followed them, and there was a long sequence designed to be just like the Dukes of Hazzard. Only two problems. It was expensive and it didn't really further the story. It would have been fun, but it didn't get us from one plot point to a new plot point. So I admire the restraint, because it already is extraneous, and to have that would have just been too much, I think. Right, Lauren?
I agree. Totally. Because when I was watching it, I could have, not that I could have done without this entire scene, but the way they shot it, just like driving to drive. I mean, I get it that these guys are like brothers and that's like their language, I guess, is, you know, having a hard conversation on the road. But it was, I didn't need it.
So they're in this drive here. They're just talking back and forth. Jonathan really wants him to fess up to what's been going on, and Jack's like, well, you want me to tell you that my marriage is like a business arrangement, or I'm only happy with this girl half my age? And, you know, he's like, well, you know, basically Jonathan's like, look, just talk to me, man. But, you know, Jack didn't want to disappoint him. And he mentioned stuff about heroes and how, you know, there aren't heroes anymore because people, they don't respect them. They just envy them and they wait for them to screw up. And Jonathan like does like a turn on him. He's like, well, you know what? You know, at least people like Lex Luthor, people know who he is, and people don't know who you are. And I don't know, like, this is, like, I get the point of this.
He says, I don't know who you are, and I was like, dramatic.
It's like kind of extreme, right?
Yeah. It's like the guy cheated on his wife with the young girl. Like, there are really worse things that you could do.
This is Jonathan Kent we're talking about, though.
But how does that personally offend Jonathan? It's like, I don't know.
But I think it's in character for him to be outraged about it, right?
I guess so.
But yeah, point taken. Like, as far as political scandals go, this is pretty tame, especially for 2005. I mean, come on, we've been through a lot and have seen a lot at this point.
Woof.
So.
Recorded on September 27th, 2019.
Make a note, right? But I guess since the girl had died, you know, even though he wasn't connected to it, like, that's eventually going to come out.
Okay, yeah,
luck,
the stakes are a lot higher for this. Yeah,
so
very true.
To be fair, there is that factor going on. But so we have that, and they kind of have they come to an understanding through, you know, driving it out like bros. Because that's... we go back to our plot with Lois in Metropolis, and she's with the European guy. And this guy's got a weird deal going on here.
This part's so creepy.
What would you walk us through what happens here, Lori?
Oh God. Well, she walks in. She's still basically wearing nothing, and he has clothes for her, and he's like, I won't look. And then he turns around and she looks in this closet, and he has an entire freaking like wardrobe of these dresses, this same exact dress. Just like a cartoon character's closet where you open the closet. It's like, oh, Billy has his red shirt and his blue pants that he wears every single day. It's like that. There's like a million red dresses in there. And underneath it, she discovers a box with possessions, and it has Melissa's Polaroid on it. And there are multiple boxes there.
Yes,
what
see, that,
happened
that's a,
to all
these
girls?
That's a very subtle thing. I like the fact there's all these boxes, right? Because this guy's been like, that really says a lot, just with set decoration.
Well, also, if you didn't know what was in the box, like, there could totally be body parts in there. Like, something like, it's because it's weird because I think on one hand, it's just their stuff. It's just like, you know, a purse and like, you know, jewelry, whatever. But the way they're in boxes, they're framed like trophies, which is just disgusting.
Like serial killer totems, you know, a term I learned from Law and Order SVU.
Or like Voldemort from Harry Potter, just like that, yeah. And then she turns around, and then whoop, he takes a photo of her with the Polaroid, and it's like, you're in the box next.
So yeah, but Lois being Lois, she's not going to take this. So she tries to escape, and she's beating this guy up pretty well. Stand up for herself.
And she's wearing like nothing, and she's like, well, I've never been in a situation where I've had to fight someone half naked, but I imagine I would be slightly hindered not wearing clothes. I don't know. That's so weird.
No, well, she finds herself in the situation a lot, so she's become accustomed to these sorts of things. But you know, she would have gotten away, too, if not for the guy who tased her in the back.
Oh, yeah.
Not a fair move, I think. And we find out that through exposition here, because Chloe and Clark are talking back in the Daily Planet, that apparently this guy has been buying strippers from the Gentleman's Club, paying, you know, a high price for them. And who knows what they're going to do for him, you know, over in Europe, right? I mean, we've all seen Taken. We know what's going on there.
Well, that's the thing is, like, they set this up to be sort of a trafficking thing because they were talking about minors and, like, these girls are disappearing and they don't totally confirm it. Like,
it's a WB show, like, on a weeknight. So probably.
is he trafficking them or is he killing them? I guess, well, he killed one of them. He totally killed one of them.
That's right. Well, I think, you know, because he's like going across the ocean and all that stuff, right? I think it would have been trafficking, but the other girl got away and instead of just trying to recapture her, they just decided to kill her. I mean, get dark places.
Right.
It's the Equalizer. I don't know if it's by seeing that with Denzel Washington. Similar situation. So anyway, Chloe and Clark doing their investigation. And to your point from earlier, Chloe learned from Maggie Sawyer about license plates and took a license plate picture, look, a picture of every car's license plate in the parking lot that night. It's pretty thorough from Chloe, huh?
Okay, so you study journalism. Is that smart or is that pedantic?
Well, you see, I didn't have a smartphone back when I was in, you know, high school. So I guess she has her just her standard, you know, Kodak digital camera. But I mean, how many cars are there? It is 4 a.m, so there must be not that many cars there. But, you know, no, leave no stone unturned. That's what I say.
Fair.
There you go. And if she hadn't been so thorough, they might not have been able to find the car. Because, of course, they find the license plate. The first one they pick the search. They find where the guy's penthouse is, you know, because this is how the internet works. Clark super speeds over there. He sees the evidence of the struggle. Finds the Polaroid of Lois on the floor. Right, so he knows he's in the right place. That was kind of unnecessary, but kind of a, you know, a creepy thing to add there.
Oh, I like the detail of, because he's like, oh, they're not here, but then he touches the printer. Oh, it's still warm.
Yeah, that is very cool. Like it's like when people touch a car, like, oh, in a movie, like, oh, they just showed up. They're still here. Right? It's a recent. Although right. the whole like, oh, the printer's still warm. Let me press this print button over here and see what the last thing he printed. Computers don't work that way.
Do they? I don't actually know. That's the hard thing is, well, one, writing for, like, as technology changes, like, writing changes, I didn't quite know if that was contrived or not.
Maybe that's how printers work in Europe, I guess, and that's where these guys got their printer. I don't know. But it was a little, like, I don't think you needed that. The reason they did that is so he pressed print again, and they saw the last thing they printed was a fake passport for Lois. That informs him that they're going to take him, you know, somewhere. And Chloe's like, oh, God, there's a helipad on the roof. So that's how they're going to, I guess, fly from there to
a
airport.
Private residence building.
Yeah. It's a very exclusive, building. And I didn't even think about that. That is ridiculous. It's like a loft. There should be like a tennis court or a pool up there, not a helipad. Right? That's suspicious. Yeah. So it's always about helicopters, but Superman isn't. Because there's
if there is
a Superman story and there's a helicopter, there's going to be trouble, right, Lauren?
Yes.
And this is a great moment because it's really like iconic, and I think this ends up in some opening credits down the road. Clark throwing the rope around the helicopter, catching it, and then pulling it back down and grabbing it.
Which, can we appreciate like the whiplash that everyone would have had if he this thing is like, it looks like it's about 3 stories high in the sky. And he yanks it hard enough so it's in his hand. Like the support on like whatever the one of the beams that would land on. He's holding that. So it happens in like a split second. Those people should
they're
not
all dead.
Be okay.
Yes, they're all dead. So we have, you know, obviously Superman the movie was a great helicopter save from Lois Lane. And then that just continues on, and obviously Smallville, there's a few instances. Supergirl is a helicopter. Helicopters everywhere.
Wait, so I have a question for you, actually. When you're watching season 5 for the first time, you were a Superman fan. You'd seen the Superman movies already, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
So did you have any thoughts about that when you watched this for the first time? What it was like, oh, it's Lois Lane in a helicopter. And
oh, totally.
He's saving her.
I totally thought that. I'm like, oh my God, it's like the thing in the movie. Yeah, totally. Whenever you have those little hints of what you saw before, it's a nice homage, but it's not like exactly the same thing or ripoff. So I did enjoy that quite a bit.
This is like it's a mark for how the fandom really took a while to set in for me, because like I never thought that.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I used to watch Superman the movie like constantly when I was a kid, so it was kind of burned into my brain. You know, but Clark does his part, saving the day. But Lois does her part too. She knocks out the people in the helicopter, especially the Euro guy. And when Clark opens the door of the helicopter, she's like, "Hey, 007, thanks for showing up." Like a great one-liner from Lois then knocks out the dude. And then we have our Lethal Weapon 2 moment, because Maggie Sawyer comes to get him, and Clark has the guy in his arm, and she's like, well, you gotta let him go. And he's like, diplomatic immunity! And that's like such a one-liner.
And
from...
that's what I learned what diplomatic immunity was.
That line became like kind of iconic from Lethal Weapon 2, because in Lethal Weapon movies, Mel Gibson's like the hothead, and Danny Glover's like the by-the-book guy. And at the end of Lethal Weapon 2, there's like this, I don't know, some ambassador, some guy doing some shady stuff, right? And then throughout the whole movie, he's like, diplomatic immunity! And then at the end, like, he's about to get away, and he tells Danny Glover, he's like, diplomatic immunity! And Danny Glover just kills him, and he's like, it's just been revoked. And it's like one of the most, like, iconic 80s action one-liners in anything. It was amazing. So anyway, it's funny that Smallville brought this into it. I know somebody in the writer's room had been thinking about Lethal Weapon 2 when they came up with that. So I appreciated the diplomatic immunity thing. So, but unfortunately here, he does get away for now.
Oh, yeah, for now. One more thing on this scene is they do have that shot where Lois and Clark are very attractively next to each other. Literally 007, he's in a suit, she's in a red dress. Mm-hmm. I also remember that this was like even in the Smallville or like Metropolis fan trailers that were made, like fan credits that were made, they always use this scene. And it, not even ones that featured the Maggie Sawyer casting. Just this was one of the scenes that people love to end on.
Well, I mean, they're on a rooftop. Clark's in a suit, which is close as you're going to get to Clark Kent at this point in the show, the iconic Clark Kent of the future. You have Lois in a red dress. So, you know, it fits. So, yeah, totally. Like, when I was doing my, you know, Smallville, because like, I dabble in a fan thriller or two in my time, I would definitely take clips from this episode because it was great. So then we get Clark going to Lex. And you know, I think the earlier scenes, I'm like, okay, like, they're on the rocks right now, but there's a clear and present thing going on. This, like, Clark just comes in to, like, kind of apologize to Lex, and Lex is like, ah, it's cool, man. Why don't you have a seat? And then, like, sit and talk. I'm like, to me, that's a little, I don't know, it was a little too friendly at this point in the show for me, the scene between them.
Well, that, and it wouldn't be Smallville if Lex didn't go on about some historical thing.
Show the story of King David. And Clark's like, oh, yeah, you know, killed Goliath. And he's like, yeah, but what they don't tell you is that one day, King David saw a beautiful woman bathing on a rooftop, and she was the wife of his best friend. So he had his best friend killed so he could be with her. I'm like, all right, first of all, that is true. The story of David and Bathsheba, that is one. I mean, they don't like trumpet that the way they trumpet David and Goliath, right? But it's actually an important story about heroes, and it's kind of fits the theme of what they're going here. Like, heroes rise and fall. They have our ups and downs. You know, we all have our, you know, our weaknesses.
It's just typical Smallville, like, appropriating. Appropriating historic pop culture, basically.
This kind of fits the story. The point is, it's like, okay, well, everybody's not perfect because, you know, Clark's like, oh, Senator Jack was my hero, as I've established over the last 4 years. But I'll make a point here. I forgot what Bathsheba's husband's name was, but he was not David's best friend. And the reason they put that in here, it's like, hey, guys, it's like Clark and Lex and Lana. It's just the triangle, right?
It's the worst thing ever. And it's just like how I was talking about earlier, how it's so painful to like watch this and then you see whatever Clark just rounds off on Lex, storms into his mansion, like, is it true? Did you do this or whatever? These things are just so like beaten to death on the show. And the first couple times, if you're rewatching, it's kind of charming. But then as like doing a comprehensive rewatch, you're like, wow, this happened every week and I loved this show back then. Wow. I still love Smallville, but I'm just having one of those moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, I used to watch this all day.
Now you understand why.
What you're going through.
Yes, why I'm the way I am, all right?
It's why it's like a hate watch for you.
Smallville is Clark and I am Lex, okay? This show made me what I am. Okay, but anyway. We cut back to the Kent farm, and I don't know if this is a Dukes of Hazzard thing, because I've never seen a dartboard in the Kent farm before, but it's Senator Jennings' Uncle Jack just playing darts. I'm like, maybe this is a reference to Dukes of Hazzard. Maybe not. I don't know. I guess they just wanted to give the character something to do for Clark to come in and talk to him. And, you know, they have a decent scene here between the two of them and really not much to it, I think. I mean, I really nothing to say about it because it's like, hey, you going to talk to my dad? Yeah, he's pretty tough on me. Oh, try being a son. You know, that nice little moment, I guess, there. But there is something that he says. He's like, oh, the one man I never wanted to disappoint was Jonathan. You know, that's what, you know, Uncle Jack says here. Then Clark says he never expects more than he expects of himself. You know, so I think that was cool, just to kind of establish where his moral compass is, if you will. So,
right.
So then we have our scene, though, between Jack and Jonathan, and Jack's going to pull out of the race.
Zach, I have a question. If Lance came to you and said, hey, man, I'm not going to run for senator. I'm a senator anymore. Will you do it? Would you do it? if Lance was a senator who'd been like reelected, you know, before or had been elected before, was running for reelection. And then he's just like, oh, my morality is compromised. I can't do this anymore. I have no experience, but you're my bud. You want to do it? I believe in you. Would you do it?
I would totally do it. I think
you're supposed to say no, because that is a ridiculous thing to say.
Well, especially someone like Jonathan, who like their whole life is about like secrets and, you know, like you putting yourself in, and they to their credit, they do address this some as they go down this plot line. But to put your family in the middle of the public eye like this, right? It's like, hey, yeah, man, I mean, a lot of stuff's going to come up, right? I mean, that's the politics, as we know. So it's I don't mind it, I guess, now in retrospect. At the time, I thought, well, that's an odd thing for them to have the Kents to do. But it gives the Kents something to do other than just be Clark's parents, I guess. And that was the whole point, right? I guess.
Do you find yourself qualifying for TV shows nowadays? Like if you're watching like Arrow or Supergirl or something and you see them do something strange, are you able to let go of it? Because I feel like the distance helps, because I think that writing in some ways has matured.
No, I think any mistakes current shows make are just a sign of horrible writing. And nothing as good as Smallville used to be. So to answer your question. No, I totally get what you're saying. You're like, well, you know, let me just figure this out here. Yeah. It is, yes. Nostalgia and love like kind of smooth over a lot of rough edges in storytelling. You know, you accept a lot more stuff. Also, it helps to know where the story is going, you know, in these older shows. Because we've seen it. We know where, oh, okay. You know. And in like a show you're watching live, you're like, why did they do that? That's stupid.
Well, for Smallville, like I was watching definitely with like a less critical lens back in the day. I mean, I was watching, you know, like adult television for the first time, young adult television for the first time. So for me, it was just I liked the show and I was just stoked to watch it every week. And I wasn't thinking about, does this make sense? But like as an adult, I'm like, huh, that does not make sense. I would not run for Senate if my BFF was just like, hey, girl, I believe in you.
Yeah, that was pretty much his whole pitch. He's like, well, I would, but there's one man who deserves it more. It's you. It's like, whoa, hold on, bro.
And so, then Jonathan Kent was like, I'm going to run for Senate.
And that is our plot for the rest of the first half of the season. It starts here in this episode. So then we have Lois moving out. And this is when Clark's like, well, you just moved back in and blah, 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 blah. And it's funny that, you know, they go up to the towel and Clark's like, wow, it's weird. I spent so much time with Lana up here. I'm like, what are you talking about?
My God.
Like two episodes? Like she like it's to me, it's like you guys have been, I know it's been weeks or months at this point, story-wise, right?
Right.
But it's like, what are you talking about? You started dating like 2-3 months ago? All this time with Lana up here.
But then Lois's comment to that just like decimated me. It basically came down to, hey, I don't want surprise visits.
Yeah, because she's like, you don't have a key, right? Because y'all were, you know, doing it. And only the way that Lois Lane could say it, right? I did find that amusing. You know, they get all settled in there and, you know, he's getting all nostalgic about it. And I do like what she says. She's like, it's not like I'm taking her place, just her sublet. So again, another funny Lois Lane line that Clark has. He's getting all like, oh, me and Yolanda used to hang out here. Although we never, I think there was like, I think one episode we saw them up there together. It was mortal. I think it was the only time we saw him up there. So,
well, he's just like, where am I going to have sex with her?
Clark's like, this is where I lost my virginity. That's probably what he's thinking, right? Because that's when it happened up there in Mortal. So anyway, oh, Smallville. So then Chloe comes in. She's like, hey, guys, I got my first story in the Daily Planet. It's funny. Clark puts
in the paper.
Oh, this
part's so cute. Yes. She's
like, Clark, it's not the torch. It's on page 73. It's way
he just like flips it open expectantly, and that's just such a cute mannerism of him.
It is. After being trained to do that every day in high school, because as I've said on the show many times, apparently the Torch published every day. So an anonymous tip got Euro guy arrested by Interpol. So justice was served after all, huh?
Yeah, and it's a testament to like the crime that happens in Metropolis that like this is a tiny column on page 73. That's pretty. A guy who, like, basically was trafficking and, like, had a girl killed, and that's, like, a little article.
It's like Maggie Sawyer said, crime here happens all the time, so.
Yep.
But then we have a nice little cute moment between Lois and Clark at the end, because she's like, if you tell anyone about my little dance routine, I'm going to tell them about your Elmer Fudd nightlight. Which is like, oh, I get it, because WB owns Superman, so they can say Looney Tunes characters, so he has an Elmer Fudd nightlight.
I didn't even put that together. Nice.
So,
yeah.
That was cute. And then it's a cute moment because he's like, aye, aye, sailor.
Which, that reminded me of in Echo, Smallville, like season 9, episode 4.
Yeah. There it is. Very good recall.
That's like one of my, I love that episode. I might have even requested it like when we were talking about this a long time ago. This is the episode where Clark can read Lois's mind and like he catches her mentally. She says, hello, sailor. So I know they're obviously not related, but it just made me think of that really funny line from season 9.
And you know, beyond just the comedy here, there is a nice moment between them. She's like, hey, I got things handled in the helicopter, but it was really nice to have your backup, so thanks for coming after me, as, like you always do. And that was a nice, like, because she's usually just like, I can handle this myself. But she, you know, she's understanding, like, hey, this guy went above and beyond to save me, and even though I could, you know, probably handle most of it myself, having him there was a help, and I want to thank him. So they're like, again, we're seeing the frenemy.
It's step one.
Nature go away, and they're actually becoming real friends.
Look, I'm not great at this, so just keep your mouth shut and listen up. Even though I was kicking butt on the helicopter, it was really nice to have backup. And you didn't have to come after me, but you always do. So I wanted to say thank you. You're a really good friend. Oh, and about the lap dance. If you decide to tell anybody about it, your Elmer Fudd nightlight will make a very public appearance.
Aye, aye. Sailor.
Exposed. Got an 8.0 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1.5 out of 5. So, Lauren, I ask you, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Exposed?
Wow, I wish I looked at what I rated my when I rated like a previous episode to know what benchmark I should be going off of. I'm always really, whenever I have to rate something, I try to think really realistically. Because like I think of like A plus is like the best thing that could ever happen. And by that scale, I would put this at like a C plus. It wasn't bad. It wasn't amazing, but it was good.
Fair enough. See, for me, I like this episode more than I think I remembered. I was like, oh, this is the strip club episode. Like, lowest common denominator. Like, hey, look at here. Lois Lane. She's in a bikini. Everybody watch the show, right? But, I thought it was really enjoyable. And I'm going to give it a B minus. So just a notch above you. It's just kind of a slightly above average episode. Some good stuff in here. But a little rough around the edges at some points. We laughed about some of the absurdities. Especially the whole, like, hey, bro. You want to take my place as senator? Like, that is a, that's a
you
big,
know, if we didn't have the Dukes of Hazzard stuff, I would probably rank it a B minus. Because there are, like, a lot of, like, sort of Lois and Clark beginnings there. And that's important. You know, the Metropolis aspect to it, Chloe getting her first byline, Lois and Clark working together, Lois costume count number one.
What
we think it is. So it would be a B minus if it didn't have all the Dukes stuff in there.
Well, I'm glad you found that costume count thing, because that is that is the only tally board we have in this episode.
Oh, really?
Well, I got it. Call it Lois's costume closet. That's what we're gonna call it. There it is. That's the alliteration I love. So we're gonna go with that. Plus one for Lois's costume closet, because she dresses up like an all-American girl, and we have that. And that's the only thing on our tally board. So there you have it.
Guys, let it be known. This is my contribution to always hold on to Smallville. I've added a segment.
Very good, very good. And then we finally have our Bechdel test, and this episode is a pass by far. Lots of good female conversations going on, not about guys, two women talking, three women talking in some scenes with Maggie, Sawyer, Chloe, and Lois. So, like, very strong episode for the Bechdel test. So we have a passing with flying colors this week.
Yay!
All right, well, Lauren, it's been a lot of fun talking about Exposed with you. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
You guys can find me just about anywhere at Lauren Neckal-Wynn. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. Hit me up. I love talking about Smallville and Superman and DC Comics related things.
All right. As for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. So you get that, Lauren? It's not Moron Zach.
I've been listening to the show for like 2 or 3 years, and like I only found Zach's personal Twitter last week. Because I have been typing moron and Zach into the search bar this whole time.
Do I not literally spell it out every week, guys? I mean, let's...
I am a visual person. When I was a little girl and we did spelling bees, I couldn't do it because I couldn't physically write the word out. If you ask me to just spell it out, that doesn't work.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So anyway, that's my Twitter. I'm also the host of another podcast, Franchise Fatigue. We talk about sequels, remakes, movie franchises, all that good stuff. When a franchise gets fatigued, you can find us on Twitter at UFP Earth. And finally, I'm a host of Standard Orbit, Trek FM's original series podcast. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise over there. You can find us on Twitter at TrekFM. As for the podcast, you can find us at Always Smallville with one S on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at Always Swollen to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwayssmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. But stay tuned next time when we talk about Splinter. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. Cold hands, warm heart. We just need some time apart. And everything will be okay. Oh no, not again. Why does it always happen? It seems like every other day.